This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, the show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at wbuafm.ua.edu. You can also download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. And as always, every week, I always ask listeners to send in ideas for topics for upcoming shows. We have most of our shows, I think, planned out for this semester, but we'll definitely need some more ideas for the spring semester. So if you have any ideas, email those to me at brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using your topic. I'll try to remember to give out this email. Catherine helps me when we come back from breaks to give out the email just to remind people, or if you have any kind of questions in general about the show. Tonight's topic is a new one for me. I'll be honest with you. Some of the topics that we do are kind of regurgitated over and over again, like depression or anxiety, test anxiety, anything that pertains to college students. But sometimes we try to put a twist on it. But this topic is really brand new to me. I've heard of it, but we've never had the topic on the show, and it's functional medicine. Often, and this what I'm about to read, it comes from an article that I did some research on using for the show for tonight. But let me go ahead and explain a little bit, and then our guests will expand on it way much more than I know. Often used as a means to treat underlying symptoms or illnesses at the root of the problem, functional medicine is frequently successful at helping the patient avoid long-term medication dependence. And in mental health, medications tend to treat the symptoms of an illness rather than the cause of the illness. So my guest tonight is Meg Magnuson. I knew I would mess that up. Sorry, Meg. Meg is an associate licensed counselor, and correct me if I'm wrong, and a functional medicine health coach. She's in private practice, and you just mentioned before the show, you're no longer in Alabama. You used to be here in Tuscaloosa, but you said you moved over the summer. Where did you move?
Yeah, so I now live in Texas, but I actually still work for Lifeline Solutions, both as a health coach and a therapist. So thankfully, there are, you know, many benefits with telehealth that I'm still able to be plugged in and be connected.
Definitely. And I asked Meg before the show about any other functional medicine health coaches here in Alabama. Where would someone go to look up near them where a functional medicine health coach would be?
So for function medicine specifically, you could go on Functional Medicine Coaching Academy. Uh-huh. I don't have the name of the website, but it might be like fmca.org. Yep. And you could look up a health coach there for functional medicine. Now, if you're looking for a health coach in general, you could probably look up on the National Board of Health and Wellness Coach. So that would be NBHWC. And find a health coach there in your area.
Okay. And I don't know if you are the only one in this area. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, based on what I've read and what I just read in the intro, I mean, that kind of sounds along the same lines as what we're trying to do here at the Counseling Center, you know, to keep people off medicine as much as we can. A lot of students tell me point blank, I do not want to take medication. I want to try an alternative route for whatever issue they're going, you know, they're coming in for, whether it's stress or some mild depression or anything else, test anxiety even. Tell us a little bit, tell the listeners, Meg, a little bit about yourself, your credentials, and why you're interested in functional medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, part of you mentioned in the intro, so I am an associate licensed counselor and a board certified health coach, sort of with a specialty in functional medicine. And I actually became interested in functional medicine by default. I guess, fortunately, unfortunately, I was pretty ill probably about 7-8 years ago. And at that time, we move around a lot. I was living in South Florida and really struggled to understand why. I've always been a pretty healthy person. It kind of just had a snowball effect of all kinds of weird symptoms, went to multiple doctors, couldn't really find out what was going on. And in the middle of being sick, we moved to Tuscaloosa. And I was able to connect with a couple doctors and just did more testing. I mean, they were kind of relentless on trying to figure out what was going on. I had moved with, my kids were kind of young at the time. They were 6 and 4 when we moved there. And I mean, I won't go into all the symptoms, but I was just not well and really trying to understand what was going on. I worked with an integrative doctor and a naturopath. And, you know, we did the things that functional medicine is known for. So really what you said, like you really try to understand the root cause. And so you're not just saying, okay, I'm coming into the office with gut health issues, or I have a lot of fatigue. I ended up being really anemic and had, some issues there and just all kinds of stuff. Right. So they didn't just say, you have this, we're going to give you this medicine, or we're going to do this.
Which is a traditional Western medical model, isn't it? In that way, it's all basically...
Yes. And that can be good for some things, right? When they say, like, when we have those acute emergencies, but if you have sort of like a chronic thing, it's kind of problematic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so essentially we did a lot of digging to figure out what was the cause. They were able to figure it out. And then you can heal. And so there was a lot of change in the diet. There was a lot of changes in things that I was doing in it. I think what was hard about it was that I didn't have anybody to kind of walk through it with me. So even though the doctors were like, this is what you can do, it was kind of like, well, I feel awful and I have kids at home and I've got to figure this out. And so the doctor ended up introducing me. I was like, once I got better, I was like, I don't want someone to have that same experience. Yes. And so she introduced me to the Functional Medicine Coaching Academy. And I eventually went through the program. I graduated from that in 2019. And I decided to combine that with the mental health piece. I actually met my current boss, Aaron, at Lifeline Solutions, who is interested in expanding wellness services with their practice. And so we kind of combined health coaching and therapy there, and they offer other wellness services that we can go into. But that's kind of the gist of the story.
How long did you have to go to the academy?
So the coaching program is a 1-year program.
Okay.
And then it is a board certified program. So then you can sit for the national board as well, which I think just helps kind of offer people reassurance about credibility and like that.
Yeah, most definitely. I gave just it, what I read, to introduce you really wasn't a definition. Give the definition of functional medicine and really how it is different from traditional way of thinking. Like I just mentioned, the Western way of thinking. And I don't know where is functional medicine's roots?
So functional medicine is really a model of the healthcare that they look for the root cause. And so if you were to meet with like a functional medicine doctor, they do a really in-depth analysis, like an intake. So they're going to look at your genetics. They're going to look at your environment, the lifestyle. They do a lot of different kinds of testing because they're really interested in looking at the root cause. I heard a really good analogy about this once where, say you have your kitchen sink is overflowing, right? And you have people in the corner there and you have a bunch of people like mopping it up, right? They're just trying to fix the sink.
Yes, plug the hole.
Mm-hmm. But they're not looking at like, well, why is the sink overflowing in the first place? And so the functional medicine is really like, if you show up with a condition or depression even, right? It's like, well, let's dig deeper into what may be streaming into that. And so the big part of it is root cause, but then there's also that holistic approach to treatment. And so it's really like a multi-prong. It's not a band-aid or, like you said earlier, like a medicine, but it might be, you're going to, again, look at all the lifestyle factors. You might look at supplements. There may be medicine, but it kind of takes, why do you have what's going on? Mm-hmm. And then once we know the root cause, how can we approach it from a variety of angles?
Okay. Well, and based on what you, that was a good analogy. That I mean, for our listeners, that would help me understand it if I'd never heard of it before. What about, well, let's do this. Let's take a break. And then when we come back, I'm going to ask you, where did this model, where did this thinking come from? How old is it? You know, is this a new way of thinking? Is it new to this area? Is it regional and it's been around in other parts of the country long before it's ever made it to the Southeast, like a lot of things do? So let's take a break, Catherine, and we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about functional medicine, and my guest is Meg Magnuson. Meg is in Texas right now, but she has a private practice here in Tuscaloosa, right? Via online.
Right. Well, I work with a therapy practice called Lifeline Solutions. So I'm part of actually a private practice. Yes.
Right. Lifeline Solutions here in Tuscaloosa. We're familiar with Lifeline. And if you have a question for myself or Meg or any questions about the show, you can email those to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. But we were just talking about like the origin of functional medicine. And I asked Meg, and I want you to answer, where does functional medicine come from? How old is it? Is it a regional thing? Is it in more areas of the country and we're just not hearing about it here?
Yes. Yeah, so that's a great question. And I don't really have it's a little bit of a broad answer. All I can tell you is that it's been around since the early 1990s. Dr. Jeffrey Bland is kind of considered the father of functional medicine. So I really think it was him and his wife that we're really wanting to understand, again, more of a different approach, different understanding of the root cause. I think that's probably the word that we would most come back to. And I believe he put kind of together like a mastermind kind of group of different physicians of in different specialties. Mm-hmm. And they ultimately created the Institute of Functional Medicine, again, in the early 1990s, I believe, to kind of train under this practice. And so, you know, you could be a physician or you could be even like a licensed therapist.
Yeah, my next question is like, what are the disciplines, you know, associated? Is it just medical doctors? I know, you know, you're a counselor. So what disciplines are associated with functional medicine? But you just answered that. So it can be many.
I think it can be many. I haven't looked into it specifically, but I honestly, when I went through the program, the coaching program, I worked with another fully licensed therapist, and she was going to go and be trained as a functional medicine practitioner. I think that's what they're called after they go through the program.
Mm-hmm. What about some articles talk about functional medicine empowers patients to take an active role in their own health? Is that the same rule that you apply to your practice, or what does that mean?
Yeah, I absolutely would see that in our framework. Because I think you not only instill hope, right, but you also want someone to have agency over their own life. And so there's very much what I would say is an educational component when you're helping educate them about their health. Say, you know, I talk about this both from like as if a physician was giving someone like a newly diagnosed diabetic patient, or you could talk to it in terms of therapy and someone maybe is wanting help with like general anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a big education piece, but then there's also where you're providing skills, you're meeting them where they are. Actually, when I think of it in terms like this, maybe an example, I think sometimes always helps a little bit more. So empowering someone who comes to me with gut health issues, that tends to be what I often see, is kind of educating them on the component of gut health. And then a lot of times there's even the component of they are maybe working with a therapist. The therapist is recognizing that they have a lot of gut health issues. And so they come to me. And so I'm educating them too on like that kind of the connection between gut health and brain health, which we can talk about later on in the show. And then I'm educating them on how to heal their gut, right? And so there's sort of a five-step process where we're talking about removing certain foods, or we might talk about certain supplements or stress or whatever. But ultimately, to empower them is to say, kind of like, understand what their strengths are, where they are in their season of life, what can they commit to, what do they want to commit to, and not just saying, here's the treatment plan and send them on their way. Mm-hmm. It's what would you like to start with? What resonates with you most? And then kind of helping them go through healing their gut in that step-by-step process.
Do you find that you have clients who, when by the time they get to you, they are pretty desperate because they've tried everything?
I think that yes. And yes, especially when I think it comes to gut health, because there's not a lot of testing even that can say, this is what I'm experiencing.
Yes. Yes.
And so in some ways, I think to them, it feels like a guessing game of, I don't feel well, but I don't really know the steps. And so again, it goes back to just understanding their lifestyle and kind of, you know, when I do an in-depth session for health coaching, we'll go through a foundation session, and it really, you get an idea of like, what are you eating? How are you sleeping? What's your movement look like? What's your stress look like? What are your relationships look like? You know, we add some of those lifestyle pieces in that maybe not always be in another kind of intake session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was going to be my next question, is how do you combine or integrate the mental health aspect with the health aspect? But that makes sense, because if you're talking about gut health, I'm assuming, now correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming you're relating that a lot of times to people's reactions, or for instance, I have students or clients who they come in for stress, or they come in for, they've had panic attacks, or they've even got test anxiety, or maybe mood disorder, maybe mild depression. But inevitably, when I start asking them about, do you have any medical issues? Mm-hmm. You know, do you have asthma? Do you have a heart murmur? Anything like that? A lot of times they will say they have GI problems, or they'll have acid reflux. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that something that you can really kind of, the first thing I think of is that's associated with the anxiety, with the stress, you know, headaches, migraines. So how do you integrate that in your practice?
Yes.
Is it through the testing? Do you do a lot of testing, or is it through the education part of educating them about their diet, like you said?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I'll try not to go off on a too long a tangent, because there's kind of a couple of different things. First, in the way I work is, some people might already be working with a therapist.
Okay.
And that therapist, because they know I work at the practice, has sort of a radar. When they're working with someone, they hear, okay, they have some health issues. Why don't you work with me on, maybe say that maybe they have a trauma they're working on with their therapist, but they see me as a health coach to work on their physical health piece. Right. So that's one part of it. And that keeps me in my lane, right, as a health coach. But sometimes I have my own clients who I'm listening to, and I'm kind of gauging also about their physical health, right? So I'm kind of hearing, right, do you have, you know, like if you have IBS, that's a sign to me that there's always the anxiety. But at some point, maybe not in the intake, but we go down this path of the connection between gut health and mental health. And a lot of it comes down to, there's so much research that's showing that the more basically about inflammation. And so when our gut health is inflamed, or we're systemically inflamed, right, there is a higher levels of anxiety and depressive symptoms. And so kind of educating them on that piece. And if they're interested or ready, then we can say, would you like, you know, do you want to learn more about that? Do you want to know how to bring those levels down? And we provide, you know, like the workshop from last week is, how can we make that connection?
You know, I know they're probably skeptics, because they're skeptics for everything.
Right.
You know, so how do you answer, and have you come across people who have been skeptical? Maybe they've been referred to you, or maybe you've been presenting at a conference or a workshop and you get, you know, hecklers. I call them hecklers. We've all had them. How do you handle that? How do you address the skeptics?
That's a great question. So I don't know if I have really had, you know, many interactions with skeptics, but it might just be because I'm surrounded by a lot of people who kind of have a similar mindset. But first I would just, you know, encourage, look from a place of curiosity. I think functional medicine, you know, it's a low risk. It's a not invasive way to approach anything.
Right.
And so if it may not be skeptic, it may be more, the word I would use is a little bit of resistance, because changing lifestyle is hard. And, you know, we love to be set in some certain ways, or we have patterns of being, and to have that change in order to feel better, it can be really challenging. So maybe I haven't run into skeptics, but definitely resistance sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, any kind of therapy that's done, we're all going to come against resistance sometimes.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes it's just a defense mechanism too.
Right.
We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, you briefly mentioned the brain connection. So I want you to go into a little more detail about that when we come back, because I'm interested in what you meant by that. Okay?
Okay. Yes.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. We're talking tonight about functional medicine. If you've never heard of that, research it a little bit, because it is very intriguing. It's interesting. It really sounds to me like it's sometimes used as a complementary form of treatment with therapy. And my guest tonight is Meg Magnuson, who's an associate licensed counselor in private practice with Lifeline Solutions. And we just talked a little bit about resistance to therapy. I called it skepticism, because I know there's people out there that are, you know, hearing this for the first time, and they're asking, you know, what is functional medicine? And Meg's kind of described that to us. And it really sounds like you said, it sounds like it can't hurt. It doesn't. I mean, it's good for everybody to kind of educate themselves a little bit about what's going on in your body, you know, and how it attributes to some of the things that's happening mental health wise, like why you might be anxious, where that comes from. You mentioned genetics even, you know. Mm-hmm. Meg mentioned just briefly about the brain connection. So talk a little bit about what you meant by that.
Yeah, so there's this... you know, a lot of great research coming out now about that gut brain health connection. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people might have heard that the gut is sort of like our second brain. You know, there's different words to talk about it. And essentially, the first part of that would maybe to help people understand, like, what is our microbiome? Like, what is gut? What's this abstract gut health you keep talking about? And really, an answer might be like, our gut is made up of trillions of bacteria. Like, we have more bacteria than we have cells. And these bacteria, they help with our digestion, they help metabolize hormones, they help our immune health, and they help our brain health. And so it's like, what does the healthy gut look like then, right? So we essentially have more good gut bacteria than bad. Mm-hmm. And so there's not that dysbiosis, but also it's really about like our intestinal lining. Like, it'll sound like a tangent, but I promise it's relatable. And so we have this intestinal lining, and when it's strong, it allows nutrients to pass through into our bloodstream, but it keeps things that we don't want going into our bloodstream, right? So whether it's chemicals or toxins or pesticides or bad bacteria, it keeps it from going in. Well, when our gut is unhealthy, that lining in our intestine becomes porous. So you might have heard of the term leaky gut, or like a gut dysbiosis or something like that.
That's right. Yep.
And so what happens is, and this was my own personal experience, was that things then go into the bloodstream because you have a porous gut, and your body becomes inflamed. Yep. And typically, maybe on a person's genetic makeup, what becomes inflamed is kind of the symptom or the condition that then is displayed. And so for some people, right, they might have this inflammation and it's more in their brain. And so they are going to have symptoms of depression, anxiety, or some people might have an autoimmune condition, or it's, you know, it manifests itself in different things. Yeah. And so what I mentioned earlier is we're learning that people who have symptoms of anxiety and depression often have higher levels of inflammation in the gut, as well as higher levels of that systemic inflammation. And so the great news, though, what I really love, and I'll share some resources later, is that when you can support good gut health, right, and good gut bacteria, it does a lot of things. So it helps control the inflammation. And it helps kind of strengthen the integrity of that lining. But also what I think a lot of people don't know, and was super interesting, like a lot of neurotransmitters are made in your gut. And so 90% of the serotonin is made in the gut.
There you go.
And there's other things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So other things like the dopamine, the GABA, the glutamate, they're either produced in the gut or they're helped supported by gut bacteria, right? And so I think understanding that some of the things that we need neurochemically for good brain health is made in the gut. And not only that, the connection, and then you might hear, okay, well, that's in the gut, but how does that get to the brain, right? Like there's still a gap there, right?
That's right.
There's the idea of the vagus nerve.
Yep.
Which is, you know, that's the connection between the gut and the brain. And so even good gut bacteria kind of helps that connection stay strong and help the transportation of those chemicals.
When you spoke of yourself personally, having some issues with this, and that's how it sounds like that's how you became really more interested in this treatment, basically. Mm-hmm. When you started coming out of it and started improving and started feeling better, did you notice that you started thinking more clearly? Was there an issue of that?
Yes, the brain fog.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that. But yeah.
Yes, I for sure had brain fog. Yes. I mean, I had a lot of issues. So what I had was SIBO. So I had, it's basically an overgrowth of bad bacteria, and that caused a lot of other issues. So it made me very anemic. It made me have brain fog. I had a lot of joint pain, all kinds of stuff. And so, yes, it takes time. When you get to that point that I was, it took time to essentially heal the gut. But yes, when you can change the gut health, people will notice that you, even memory, right? Yeah. Better focus. Yeah. But a lot of those are the neurochemicals. Yeah. And so there's such a, yes. The short answer is yes.
I think that is, you know, to hear you explain it clearly like you've been doing, to me, there's just no question now about the connection with some of the people who I've seen. And if they were able to treat what's going on in their body, I think a lot of the mental health issues would be alleviated even. I mean, that's mm-hmm. That's a big word, you know, to say, but what about, you know, treatment? I mean, I know that's like the magic question. What is the treatment? One of the articles I read in researching for the show, and you've mentioned also testing, a lot of functional tests is what the article said. What kind of testing are they talking about? What are you able to send people for? And then when you get those tests back, how do you prepare a treatment plan for that person?
Yes. So the testing is outside of my scope. But what I would encourage people who come to me who maybe aren't already working with a doctor would be to ask them, you know, to find or work with maybe a primary care doctor who would test.
We're talking about medical tests. We're not talking about psychological testing.
Yes. Yes. So I would probably have them look for vitamin deficiencies. That would be a start. They can check inflammation levels for sure. They can check, you know, different things like that, because I think, you know, so for example, someone who comes in with depression, if you were looking at it from a functional medicine perspective, they're going to look for the root cause. So they might look for a vitamin D deficiency or omega-3 deficiency. They might check the thyroid. They might check for pre-diabetes. So that's part of it, right? But there's also maybe there could be social situations. There could be trauma. Like there's the other side of it too.
Right, right.
And so I think you look at both. And so even when I'm talking to, you know, someone about diet or food and mood and helping them make the connection between food and mood, is if they're testing for vitamin deficiencies, well, let's look at magnesium, right? And then that really can help with anxiety. If you're low in it, these are foods you can eat to help support that.
Which ironically, I just invited someone to be on the show in November on this topic. Changing what you eat changes, you know, your mood, et cetera.
Fantastic. Yes.
I hope they agree to be on the show. I haven't heard back yet. But
yes.
This may be a weird question, and I don't know if you can answer it, but I'm going to go for it. What do you think are some of the limitations of in psychiatric medicine, which is what we see a lot of, that functional medicine, you know, helps to compensate for?
I'm thinking about that question.
Yeah.
So basically, how can functional medicine complement psychiatric medication?
Right. Or maybe, you know, it might just be an opinion. You and I both probably would agree. There are mental health issues which maybe really need medication.
Absolutely. You know?
But there are other mental health issues that I feel like can be, you know, coped with or dealt with, I guess you could say, or prescribed even, you know, without medication too. And this is where the functional medicine sounds like it comes into play. And that's why we've been talking about it for so long, but I don't want anybody to think that this would be like a replacement, you know, for
right.
psychiatric evaluation even, you know,
right.
And maybe you've seen somebody like that you've had to refer them.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times with the functional medicine piece, in that I work with specifically as the health coach, is more the modifiable lifestyle factors.
Yeah.
And so it would go back to complementing the medicine would be helping them understand how, I don't know if it's we take for granted or maybe we just don't quite appreciate the strong connection between lifestyle and our mental health. And so if you were even looking at someone who might be on antidepressants, and I'm understanding about movement, for example, right? Or maybe that's even an area that they just want to expand on. And it's, you know, so there's a Stanford health psychologist, Kelly McGonigal.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote this book called Joy of Movement. And she writes about it way more articulately than I could talk about it. But she talks about, you know, these like that our muscles are like an endocrine organ, and that when we are literally contracting our muscles, it's like a pharmacy. And I think just finding these different ways, I like to talk to the clients like toolkits. And so understanding like food is a pharmacy and movement is a pharmacy, yes, and sleep, yes, is a pharmacy.
Look at it a different way. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is probably the framework that I would think about in terms of complementing it with maybe medicine that they're already taking.
Do you work with college age population, or do you have some clients that are of college age?
I do. Yes.
Is it hard? Is it difficult to convince them? To change their lifestyle? Because I find some resistance with that sometimes, because they think they've already done that. Oh, I've already done this. I've had them tell me, oh, I've already tried to do this. I've tried to go walking, or I've tried to, and mm-hmm. that's kind of hard sometimes to get them to buy into that. Do you find that's true too?
I do find that. And I find that even more so, I think with the food piece can be very tricky for that age. And I try to remember how I was in my 20s, that I probably wasn't going to say.
When I had a metabolism. Yeah.
Right. Right. It's probably a little bit harder to understand than that kind of connection.
Yeah.
And also adding it to a very full plate that a lot of them have.
No pun intended.
Right. Yes, that was good.
You didn't even realize what you did. We're gonna take our last break, and when we come back, I want to ask you, I don't know if you can answer this, but I read this in the article, the same article I referenced. It's from Psychology Today, and it's called The Role of Functional Medicine in Mental Health Care. And it mentions brain mapping. So I don't know if you know anything about that, but I'm going to ask you about it when we come back. And also, let's take an email question when we come back. So if you'll stay tuned, you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about functional medicine. Such an interesting topic. It's intriguing. I love the holistic aspect of it. And I love having options too. Like, there's not just one way to treat somebody. And mm-hmm. I think other people, the clients love that too. They love having that option too. And I'm sure when they find you, my guest tonight is Meg Magnuson, by the way. She's in private practice. She's also a counselor like I am. And Catherine's a social worker. Sorry, Catherine. I keep thinking you're a counselor. But I think people probably are relieved when they find you and are able to meet with you for the first time. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a great option. Maybe something hasn't worked for them in the past. Maybe traditional medicine hasn't worked for them in the past. Meg, let's take an email question, and we may have already answered it, but this is a little more specific. What are the benefits of using a functional medicine health coach?
Great question. So I would probably first answer it of what is the benefit of having a health coach? Because we've talked about the functional medicine piece. So it's, it's very personalized. And that was actually another thought that I didn't add, is functional medicine is very like a personalized treatment plan. It's not a one size fits all. And so coming in and being able to really unpack all the layers, and understanding and making the connections, but then also really help. What I like to do is ask people, like, well, what does wellness look like to you? And, you know, bringing in all the pieces. What are your strengths? What are your values? What does wellness look like to you? And really helping them co-create sort of a wellness plan. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, each kind of subsequent session is really them coming. It's very client centered. So they come and this is what I want to work on, you know, it's kind of really helping them understand these are the obstacles. This is what's working well. This is where I need more resources and information. And it goes back to, I think, empowering them to be in charge of their health, giving them a sense of agency over their own life and knowing that they know their bodies best and they know themselves best and really being able to bring that out, but then come alongside them because, you know, change is hard. Lifestyle change can be hard. And so not only being an advocate, and like a cheerleader for them in a sense, basically, but but also helping them even just make those incremental changes and be that accountability person, really whatever role they need you to step into.
What, you know, for the college age students who you see, what would you say is the most common issue in that population?
I would say, it's just a lot of anxiety.
And that manifests physically with what we've already mentioned with IBS, with acid reflux, migraines. Can you think of anything else that would show up that, you know, that you've seen, maybe something kind of unusual even?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't think of anything unusual. It almost always manifests in some sort of gut health.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, a problem with the sleep, especially, you know, it sounds very typical for a college student, but I would say even outside of the college sphere.
I tell people all the time, a lot of times students won't come in for just anything else, but when their sleep starts getting interrupted and they can't get themselves back in that cycle, they'll come in here. Because you can't function without, you know, off of their sleep cycle. So
right.
And it's, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and it goes back to where it'd be trying to educate them that it goes back to the gut bacteria. Like a good rounded, diverse, populated gut bacteria is shown to really help the sleep. And so,
how long does it take to? I don't know how to ask this, but if you come in, if somebody meets with you and it is determined that their gut is messed up, I'm going to say that like that, how long would it take to turn it around to start feeling some results?
Well, I think part of it would depend on their level of commitment. I mean, part of it would be if they're willing and able to take out some triggering foods, sort of like an elimination diet. So take out foods that might be inflaming. They're not the same for everybody, but you know, those big hitters where it might be like gluten or dairy or eggs and going through something like that. So if they can do that for several weeks before they reintroduce them, you can start noticing feeling better pretty quickly. And then when you can start bringing in other foods for the healing part of it, and maybe in some extra supplements, you know, it, several months at least just to feel better. It takes longer for like that full healing. But I think some people can feel remarkably better if they get out food that they're sensitive to that they don't realize.
They don't know.
Right. Because it doesn't come out like an allergy, right? Where, you know, you're like, well, I'm allergic to that.
It's funny, though, sensitivity. That you mentioned that, because when you were describing it, my first thought was it almost sounds like if you went to an allergist and they would like get rid of all these foods and then slowly bring it back in. It kind of sounds like the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. But the sensitivity tests, there aren't sensitivity tests. I guess that's right. that's the concern.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You mentioned briefly about resources. Give us some resources that people who are interested in functional medicine can look up. Are there any cool books, websites, apps even?
Mm-hmm. So we could always go to the Institute for Functional Medicine. I don't know if that's a cool book or app, but that would be
a start.
It's a start. Yes. Dr. Mark Hyman is a really good resource. He actually worked out, may have even started the Institute for Functional Medicine. And then he started a functional medicine practice at the Cleveland Clinic.
Okay.
So he has a podcast called The Doctor's Pharmacy, but I believe it's spelled with an F, like a F-A-R-M-A-C-Y. Yeah. He also works alongside Dr. Drew. I'm going to spell his name. I wrote it down because it's different. It's okay. D-H-R-U. And then his last name is Purohit. So P-U-R-O-H-I-T. He has a really good podcast that's called The Broken Brain. So he talks a lot about functional medicine.
Cool.
And I actually pulled a book outside that I also really like. So this is called a book, This Is Your Brain on Food.
Oh, yeah.
So her name is Dr. Uma, U-M-A, Naidu, N-A-I-D-O-O. I may have butchered that, but that's why I say it. So she actually has a really great story. I mean, she is a professionally trained chef, but she's also a nutritional psychiatrist at Harvard. And so I think she just has a lot of interesting angles to come about of how does food impact our mood. And so she goes, you know, she'll go through a section just dedicated to depression or anxiety or OCD or, you know, ADHD. And like, these are foods you could eat to really support you. These are foods you may want to steer clear of. She talks about the gut health connection there.
So it's another great resource. Psychiatrist.
Yes. I think it might be, I don't know if it's an emerging field, but I think these nutritional psychiatry, I think of, you know, there's more like integrative or functional medicine neurologist.
Wow. That's wonderful. That's fascinating too. And to me, that goes along the lines with a lot of what you're talking about, you know, the holistic viewpoint. I just think that is really fascinating. I'm still kind of thrown. I'm just thrown because I didn't know there was a nutritional psychiatrist field. So now I've got to go research that a little bit and try to get one of those on the show to talk about that.
Yes.
That's a cool book. It's called This Is Your Brain on Food.
This Is Your Brain on Food. And she's done a lot of interviews. So I always say, you know, some people like, oh, I don't want to read the whole book, but if you just search her up, Uma Naidu, she's had a lot of great interviews on different podcasts that could give people just a kind of a snapshot of what that might look like.
That's cool. Thank you so much. Thank you. Those are great resources.
Yes.
Thank you for being on the show too. This has been fascinating. It's gone by fast.
Yes. Thank you. It's a fun topic. It's just a fun area to explore. And like you said, it gives people
some other options. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. If anybody's listening and is interested, you can go to the websites that Meg has mentioned. I'll try to mention those again in the future because they're just, and hopefully this show will be up on Apple Podcasts in a few weeks. And if you need to, I might try to put it in the comments below. So that'd be good. Thank you so much again.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. I'm going to make a few announcements before we go. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted on Apple Podcasts, also on audioboom.com and voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. There's a link to voices.ua.edu on our Counseling Center website. It's at counseling.ua.edu. I want to mention next week is a big week for us. October 4th through the 8th is the University of Alabama Suicide Awareness Week. So there's going to be lots of activities, lots of educational opportunities for all the students on campus. There's going to be some QPR training, which is question, persuade, and refer about. It's a training for suicide prevention. There's going to be a dodgeball kickoff tournament fundraiser. Catherine, did you know that? I didn't know that. Several unique activities that we've never done. And then it culminates in the suicide out of the darkness suicide awareness walk, and that should be next Sunday. If you're interested, go to our website. It's counseling.ua.edu, or you can call here at 205-348-3863 and get that information. So that's a big event. We have, I think we have it in the fall and in the spring now. It used to just be in the fall. I like to thank a few people who've made our show possible. Our executive director here at the Counseling Center, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media, of course, Catherine Howell, my production assistant and my colleague, the WVUA staff who help us edit this show, and my guest tonight, Meg Magnuson. Don't forget, we're on next week, and next week our topic is the habits of stress-resilient people. I think that's a perfect topic going into October, which is a very stressful month for students and all of us because it'll be midterms. So if you're interested, tune in next week. And thanks again for listening tonight. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.